세바야. 옴 나모 바가바테 바수데바야. 옴 나모 바가바테 바수데바야.
스리만 바가바탐 third canto chapter 2 text 18
ko va amusha angri saroja renum vismartam ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum ishita puman vijigran yo vispuru ena bhume param kritantena tiraschakara kova amushangri saroja renum vismartum ishita puman vijigran yo vispurad bhru vitapena bhumer param kritantena tiraschakara kaha who else
Sva,
either.
Amusha, the Lord's. Hungry,
feet.
Sarojarenum,
dust of the lotus.
Vismartum,
to forget.
Ishita,
may be able.
Puman,
person.
Vijigran,
smelling.
Yaha,
one who.
Vispurat,
expanding.
Bruvitapena,
by the leaves of the eyebrows.
Bhumehe,
of the earth.
Param,
burden.
Kritantena,
by death blows.
Tiraschakara,
executed.
Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who were burdening the earth. Purport. Lord Krishna cannot be accepted as one of the human beings, even though he played the role of an obedient son. His actions were so extraordinary that by the simple raising of his eyebrows, he could deliver death blows to those who were burdening the earth.
Om agyamiti mirantasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovistam stapitam jena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam tadati shapadantikam vandeham shri guru Shri Jata Patakamalan, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savatutam, Parishana Sehitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padan, Sahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakhan Vitamstra. Hey Krishna, Koruna Sindho, Dina Bindho Jagatmate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi, Radhe Brindabaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hori Priye. Vancha kulpitarubhyascha kripa sindho bhyayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vas Adi Gaur Bhaktarinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Kova Amushangri Sarojarenum Vismartam Ishita Puman Vijigran Yovispurad Bru Vitapena Pumer Bharam Kritantena Tirastrakara. The lotus feet of the Lord are all attractive to the devotees by their appearance, by touch, by smell, by every form of perception. The Lord's feet, the Kumaras, simply by smelling the tulsi offered at the lotus feet of the Lord, became attracted to devotional service, although they were already on the platform of liberation. Atmaramas Chamunayo, the Kumaras were Atmarama, self-satisfied, self-realized souls. But even they were attracted. They were on the impersonal level. But they became attracted by the personal features of the Lord, and specifically by the dust of his lotus feet, or by the tulsi offered at the lotus feet of the Lord. The Kubja, the society girl, also was freed from all lusty desires by smelling the lotus feet of the Lord. So the Lord's lotus feet are, first of all, a personal feature. When we say lotus feet, it means person. The Mayavadis neglect the lotus feet of the Lord. Patantyadho nadrata yushmarangriya. They fall down even from the liberated platform because of their neglect of the Lord's lotus feet. That is to say, the neglect of the personal feature of the Lord. Whereas for the devotees, the lotus feet of the Lord are a transcendental attraction. And here, Uddhava says that the aroma of the Lord's lotus feet is unforgettable. Unforgettable. The impression is so transcendentally powerful that no one could forget the lotus feet of the Lord. It's a rhetorical question. Who could forget the lotus feet of the Lord? And the implied answer is no one could possibly forget. Vismartam, especially the devotees, are enlivened by all the pastimes of the Lord, the physical features of the Lord, the dust of his lotus feet, everything concerning the Lord enlivens the devotee or serves as an impetus to devotional service to the Lord. There are different impetuses to devotional service. The Lord himself with all of his different features, and also the Lord's devotees serve as an impetus for devotional service to the Lord. By coming in touch with the Lord or the Lord's devotees, one feels inspired to serve the Lord. Ko va amusha angri saroja renu. Vismartam ishita puman vijigram. Ya vispurad bru vitapenam bhume bharam kritantenam tirashchakara. And that same person whose lotus feet are so attractive also just was so powerful that by the mere raising of his eyebrows he could give a death blow to the bharam, bhume bharam, the burden of the earth. Bhara means burden. The modern politicians are concerned with overpopulation, which they say will constitute a burden on the earth, but actually they're the burden on the earth. That there are so many people born is not a problem. There's enough land, there's enough water, there's enough of everything. But the political heads of state or their confederates, the big industrialists on the highest level are interested in monopolizing those resources for sense gratification. monopolizing the land, monopolizing minerals, monopolizing water even. Wars have been fought over water since the earliest recorded history. Fighting over a well, fighting over a river, fighting over something to do with water. And still it's going on, either at the economic or the political level. Economic warfare over water. We have the rights to this water. You can't touch this water. Then what to speak of other natural resources like petroleum and many others. For these things, the demons create warfare on the face of the earth under different excuses, different pretexts, different slogans. They create a war in a peaceful world just for exploitation and sense gratification. And they'll make up different stories about why they're doing it, having to do with freedom and human rights and equal rights for women and democracy and peace and stability and on and on and on and on. But the real reason is sense gratification. Exploitation for sense gratification. And especially so that the few can wield power and influence and enjoy at the expense of the many. So that the 5% of the people who have 95% of the wealth can call the shots, can be the enjoyers and controllers. Ishiro ham maham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. Such persons have been there throughout history, and in the time of Lord Krishna, such demons were there. They're described in the Bhagavad Gita as asuras, or demons, on account of their godless mentality. Even if there may be, of course, they may give some lip service to God. One American politician ran for president, and his wife, this is quite some time back, his wife said, "I knew that he was going to run for office when he called me up and said, get the children ready for church." Simply a show of being God-fearing men. They simply fear that if they don't put on the show, it will harm their political influence. But their underlying mentality is, we're the enjoyers, we're the controllers. Not that we dedicate our lives to God, we dedicate these resources to God. We exploit and monopolize these resources for our own self-aggrandizement. This is the mentality of the asuras, or the demons. Just like Duryodhana, his interest in the kingdom was his own sense gratification, just to have it, to be the man in control, and to deprive others of having it. It's mine, and it's not yours. There's a certain pleasure in owning it, and there's another pleasure in preventing others from owning it. Adyo bijanavan asmi. What is that? Konyosti sadrusham. It's right before that.
Aso maya hatashatur hanishe chaparan api ishroham hambhogi siddhoham balavan suki idam adya maya labdham imam prapsye manoratam idam astidam apime pavishati punadama.
Today I've already got so much.
Idam adya, adya means today, maya labdham, so much has been gained by me already. Imam prapsye manoratam, and by my plans and schemes I'll get more. This is the business of the calculators, the exploiters. How much do I have and how much more? You get to a point where how much you have is no longer matters to the way you live. After you've passed so many billions, how much more can you eat? How many more women can you enjoy? How many more houses can you live in? How much bigger can your yacht be? At that point, it simply becomes manoratam, a pleasure for the mind that the numbers have doubled. I look in my bank account and I see it shot up. We took over this company. We took over that country. We monopolized the market on this resource. No longer matters as to how I live, because I've already got 10,000 times more than I need. But the pleasure of being able to double it, to have twice as much, to have three times as much. There was a sign in Bombay, a billboard, a couple years back. Now that you've made your first million, what are you going to do? And the answer, of course, was start working on your second million. No need. But that's the pleasure, that I can get more. And that I can prevent others from having more, from competing, that I can compete with others and win. I can compete with others and win. Idam astidam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. I've already got so much and I'll get more. Aso maya hatashatur. These are my enemies and I've killed them. Either literally or figuratively. We really killed those guys. Financially, there's a pleasure in that if you can just tear the guts out of their company, kill them in the marketplace. That's pleasure. And for some, literally to kill them. Well, that man's not going to be a problem anymore. Well, that takes care of the competition in that department. It's a pleasure being able to pick up the phone and know that 24 hours later, your competition will be dead. For the demonic men, there's a certain pleasure in that. And this goes on at small scale things. Even, what to speak of competition, just anyone. We know some people, for an evening's thrill, they'll just knock someone off. But that's irresponsible. For the responsible demons, they knock people off with a purpose. So the schemes are going on how to, for political advantage, for power. Some African country, the number two man in the government was extremely popular, and he somehow or other, he fell out of a helicopter and died, and that was the end of him. But it was strange that before he fell out of the helicopter, he managed to shoot both his legs off. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the sort of thing that goes on. For political power, we regularly assassinate our competitors, whether within our own country or within other countries, we assassinate the opposition. Aso maya hatashatrur, he's my enemy and I've killed him. Hadashye chaparanapi. And my other enemies, they had better watch out. I'll kill them also. I put them on notice, perhaps, if I'm feeling a little magnanimous. You stay in your place or you're dead. And again, it can be either literally or financially. You will do this. You will sign this contract. You will assign to us these rights. You will agree to these terms. Because otherwise, we put an embargo in place, or we take out your president, or take out your political party, or we make it impossible for you to get XYZ, whatever it is. Or we back your military enemies over the border, threaten the security of your country. Or if we're not feeling so indirect, we declare that your country is a threat to world peace and we invaded ourselves. In Hawaii, that was done. Not world peace, but local peace. I don't remember the year. This is mainline history, by the way. The Hawaii was ruled by a hereditary traditional line of kings, and the Americans had an interest in Hawaii, particularly because of the pineapple crop, which was very lucrative. Sugar was also an issue. And at some point, it was declared that there was a threat to the security of American civilians in Hawaii, and the Marines were needed to assure their safety. So the Marines invaded Hawaii, removed the ruling authority, took over the government, arranged for whatever it is that the powerful pineapple cartel was seeking. And such is the history of America's peaceful annexation of Hawaii. No, on a pretext, simply for money. These pineapples are ours. They're pineapples. They're fighting over pineapples. You know, supposedly we're fighting over freedom or personal safety or democracy or human rights, but really we're fighting over pineapples. Or we're fighting over sugar, or we're fighting over water, or we're fighting over uranium, or we're fighting over oil, or we're fighting over territory, or we're fighting over access to a market, or we're fighting over control of a market. That's what we fight over. The power, money. Demonic mentality. And material, even on the small scale, neighbors fight over. I knew one set of neighbors who were living in a very nice condominium in Bombay. And the two neighbors, there were three adjoining flats, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. So Shivam and Sundaram shared a stairway or an elevator, it was an elevator and a water tank. And they were at war over who had ownership and control of this water tank and this elevator. And it was a war. People would call one another at all hours of the night and then hang up. People would call the police for no reason. People's children were told, you couldn't play with this one, or this one has done that one, or this one's parents have done this or that. It was an all-out war over an elevator and a water tank. And it wasn't that there was a problem. They were living very nicely, very comfortably in these very nice condominium apartments, but it was the principle of the thing. It's ours. It's not yours. This is the demonic mentality. Even over an elevator and a water tank, now up the ante a little bit, expand that, boost that now to the international level, where people are no longer owners of condominiums, but they're owners of multinational corporations. They're owners of vast tracts of land. They're, through this proxy or that proxy, owner of the resources of the land, the minerals, the gold, the diamonds, the steel, the uranium, the industries, the market. Now, let's have those same squabbles at that level. And you'll see hundreds of thousands, millions of people killed for the sake of someone's sense gratification. That's the way the material world works. And that's described in the Bhagavad Gita. It's not just aimless talk. But this is the objective description given by the Lord himself about the characteristics of the demonic class of men. So they're described here as bhume bhara, a burden on the earth. The earth can handle lots of people, but the demons constitute a burden on the earth. They constitute a burden on the earth. So vinashaya chaduskritam, one of Krishna's missions is to vanquish those demons, or to lighten the burden of the earth, remove that burden. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of demons who were posing as the royal order. So that was the impetus for the Lord's appearance. The bhumi personified, the earth personified in the form of a cow, appealed to Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. These demons are overburdening me. They're just exploiting me like anything and creating misery. So please do something. So Brahma approached the Lord, along with the demigods, approached the Lord. You please appear. This has now gone beyond my power to fix. You please come. So, of course, Krishna had many reasons for coming, but one reason was that in response to the appeals of Bhumi and the demigods and Lord Brahma, the Lord agreed to come and remove that burden. So this is another glory of the Lord. One glory is that the dust of his lotus feet is so attractive that just by smelling it even once, the devotee can receives an indelible impression. He can't forget the attractiveness of the lotus feet of the Lord. And for the demons, the Lord dispatches them. The Lord appears as death personified and removes them from the face of the earth for the benefit of the sadhus, parachanaya sadhuna, for the benefit of the honest people or the devotees, the Lord periodically comes, reestablishes Sanatana Dharma, and removes these demonic elements. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, the Lord appears in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and instead of killing the demons, he kills their demonic mentality. So this is the Lord's mercy, and the political and economic leaders of the world are best advised to take shelter of the holy name of the Lord and change their demonic mentality. Otherwise, they'll get the results of their demonic activities, either in this life or in the next, and that will be severe. That will be severe. For small sinful activities, people suffer so much. And what to speak of wholesale, world-class, multinational demonic activities. For that sort of vicious thing, Krishna says, Muddha janmani janmani mama prapyaya kontaya to yanti adamam gatim asurim yonem apan na tanaham drishita kruran sang sarayishu naradhama shipam yajasrama shubham ashvishvevi yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, cruel, the lowest among human beings, I throw them down again and again into the wombs of demons. And again they take birth, mudha janmani janmani, in the lower species of life, or yes. And they can never attain me. Mama prapyaya vakontya. Tato yantyada mam gatim. Rather, they go down to the lowest regions. They go down to the lowest regions. In the Bible, it said that the wages of sin are death. But in the Vedic literature, it's worse, because there's not only one death, but there's many, many. So those who are sinful are making their future very atrocious. And those who are chanting Hare Krishna are saving themselves from this material existence. All right, some questions?
When one looks at the at how the world is run, or how it's managed, or, you know, things like you mentioned with the resources and the greed, at one point in life one starts to understand that when one is young, it's not very
One realizes how demonic these people are and the extent of their atrocious activities, and the scope of it, how pervasive it is and how little you can do about it. People don't realize that. There's a lot of people who they see what's going on and they try to change it. They start a truth movement or a revolution or a this or that. A movement for change. hope and change and a new regime, a fresh new start, or expose the truth sort of effort, or uplift the downtrodden, or overturn the powers that be. There's so many things like that. And essentially, these things are pitifully ineffective. In fact, sometimes these things are encouraged by the powers that be. I'm told that the Nazi regime encouraged the telling of anti-Nazi jokes during the Third Reich, because it was a way to dissipate negative energy. If people would get together and tell anti-establishment, real rebellious sort of jokes, well, that diffused the negative energy and prevented people from doing anything effective. And it's a common strategy. It's done in many different ways. You start you provide for a remedial committee or a grievance committee where you can express, what it is that you're unhappy about, and you go there and you say, and that dissipates the energy, and now they don't have to worry about you anymore. Or we point to that guy over there who's attacking our country, and we all go after him, and that dissipates all the negative energy because it's all directed over there. Or there's so many different ways to direct the energy so it doesn't hit us and we can remain in power, we can remain in control. Or we simply don't worry about you. We keep you small, we divide you. If there's 10 of you who know what we're doing and who are working against us, then we bring someone to help you, an 11th person, and the 11th person creates dissension between the other 10, and the 10 wind up fighting among one another. Or the 11th person works with all 10 to try to bring the truth to light, but the 11th person brings in stuff that's flimsy and reduces the credibility of our group, so that people look at these 11 people are crazy. There's so many different ways of Or we bring in our media people and we report that there's 10 crazy extremists over there who actually believe. Can you imagine that, Charlie? Yeah, John, there's all kind of people in this world. Well, that's it for tonight, Charlie. The 10 o'clock news. Just make it seem absolutely stupid or ridiculous or extreme or crazy. So that even if, say, 1 out of 3 people in your country believe that you're doing something demonic and know how you're doing it, it doesn't matter. We've got 2/3 of the people who are still sleeping. We can carry on with 2/3 majority. The rest, the other 1 out of 3, you guys can jump up and down. It's fine with us, as long as we stay in control. So there are so many different things. People are imagining they're going to overturn the military and political industrial complex. They're dreaming. So, and even if they overturn it, the next demonic establishment comes into place, usually led by them. If we overthrow the bad guys, then we become the bad guys next. We become the bad, because these things are controlled ultimately by Maya, the illusory energy. So one reform movement, one political emancipation, a liberation movement comes in, throws out the bad guys, and becomes the next dictatorship or the next exploitive regime. So you can't really do anything about that. And the people who dedicate their lives to political change are ultimately wasting their time. Unless there's a connection with spiritual emancipation. Political change is good, throw out the bums is good, kill the demons is good, but unless there's purification, unless there are purified leaders, it doesn't make a difference. Prabhupada, when he started a political party or encouraged the beginning of a political party and an effort that he soon abandoned, he called it the In God We Trust Party for Purified Leaders. Prabhupada's idea was that two things. The problem is, first of all, the present political leaders are untrained and filthy. They don't know what to do, and they're thoroughly contaminated in their understanding and their objectives. And the second thing is that even if they had proper understanding, they really don't have power. Whoever's in the so-called kings today are figureheads. They don't really have any power. And the presidents and prime ministers also don't really have the power they seem to have, because they're owned lock, stock, and barrel by vested interests who've put them there and who can remove them either by vote or by more extreme measures at any moment. Though these people are bought and sold by the dozen, they don't have power either. So even if somebody wants to do good, he has no power. So Prabhupada's position is that there should be leaders who are powerful, who can actually do something, and who are pure, who are God-conscious, who follow regulative principles for spiritual advancement and can actually lead their citizens in that sort of life. Very different from what we get under the title of democracy or communism or monarchy or anything else in the modern world. So finally, Prabhupada's program is that the only thing that helps is Krishna consciousness. Even if you don't bring about your political change, at least people will become, some people will get your message and become free from this, as Prabhupada called it, dungeon of demons. And at least the person who's doing the work himself, he'll get free from this dungeon of demons. The political change agents wind up not bringing about effective political change, permanent political change, which is really not possible. And they themselves stay in the material world. So what good have they really done? But the transcendental change agent is actually whatever he can do for others on whatever scale will be permanently beneficial, and he'll permanently benefit. And that's the program. And if it extends sufficiently, people become Krishna conscious, they'll demand that these bums be thrown out. They'll be at least thrown out, if not dealt with more deservingly.
Yeah.
Is that the latest prediction, that 2012 is when it all hits the fan? What's so special about 2012?
What do you think so?
2012? Well, the date, to tell you the truth, doesn't hold great significance for me. The there are regular predictions that it's going to be the year 2000 or the year 2012 or 2222. Oh, that looks bad. Yeah, there's all sorts of, everyone's got a calculation. From our point of view, it's always bad. It's just a question of this way or that way. Or from another point of view, it never matters. For us, it's always good. Chant Hare Krishna, however bad it gets, and it's always the same. So just like right now, there's a big recession going on, but the devotees are recession-proof. You know, we chant Hare Krishna, and our life goes on. Our life doesn't come to an end because of, we're not jumping off of buildings because of recession and so on. So it will get bad. 2012, 2013 is not going to be a very good year either. I wouldn't hold out great hopes for 2011. It's all bad. The material world, good or bad, it's all bad. Next batch coming.
The next batch comes up. Remove all the Jews from the world, and then there are other greedy people coming up.
Yeah.
It makes no difference.
It makes no difference.
What's the hope in the long run?
The hope is that the whole world will be burned to cinders by Lord Anantadev, and that'll be the end of that.
And when will that
be? Oh, that happens at the end of Brahma's lifetime. Mm-hmm. That's not for a while. The world is hopeless.
So what about Vanasham Dharma?
Yes. Those who live by Varnashram Dharma will be benefited. Our success doesn't depend on worldwide acceptance. If even one person becomes a pure devotee, we consider the mission a great success. Now, we'll try to spread it as far as possible. If we can spread it to thousands, tens of thousands, millions, if countries take it up, fantastic. But even if one person takes it up, and it's a success. We're not dependent on numbers or sales projections or something like that. Whatever we can do in the service of Krishna, it's a success. It may be small, it may be big.
But then how about the insertion of that golden age?
Well, that's not under our power. All we can do is try for it as far as the golden age. We can try to be instrumental, but it's not within our power to bring in a golden age. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so desires, the golden age will be there, and those who've contributed will get the credit. But it's not, that's all we can do is be instrumental. And it's not that, well, after the golden age is over, well, there's nothing to do anymore. Still, whoever contributes to spreading the mission of Krishna consciousness is eternally benefited and gets the opportunity to benefit others.
Mm. You said that the fighting goes on for sense gratification essentially, but some of the fighting may be just for survival. One form is here and another form is there. One cuts off the water from the other, you have no water anymore, his family is doomed.
Well, it's typically sense gratification anyway. One family cuts off the water and the other family has no water and now they have to fight for survival. But it was because of greed. So sometimes one has to defend oneself against the greedy parties and so on. That may be there. But the problem originally is that greed. The problem originally is that greed. So then, yes, then people have to fight for survival. Typically, you know, some greedy party invades your country to get the resources, and then wants to bulldoze your homes and drive you out and kill you if necessary and so on. And your only problem is that you happen to live there. You have no political interest. You had no interest in overthrowing the other country or knocking down their buildings or interfering with their way of life or clashing with their civilization. But it's just your misfortune that to happen to live on land that's strategically valuable for the other party. So then what do you wind up doing? You wind up defending your home or your property or your family, which makes you a terrorist. Why fighting in the devotee community? Because of Maya. Otherwise, what is the need of fighting? But this is Maya's business, to create, Prabhupada gave the example, or Bhagavatam gives the example, the friction between the bamboos is created by the air. Maya gets in there and creates needless friction, and then you have fighting, and that becomes an impediment to the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And Maya facilitates it. Why, if I'm sitting here and you're sitting 10 miles away, how could I fight with you? But if we both have an internet connection, and it's possible. So Maya makes it possible for global warfare among even people of who ought to be friends or ought to be colleagues. Maya makes it possible to fight with them, for them to fight among themselves, even if they don't know one another. They don't even have to see one another, know one another. They can still have the opportunity fight. And Maya, taking advantage especially of the false ego, false prestige, anger, kama, krodha, tatata, lobha. So it's not just greed, but it's anger and false prestige and so on. These things are there. Therefore, the Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Prabhupada instituted 24-hour kirtan. If you're in 24-hour kirtan, then you're not going to be in trouble. Holy name is going and we're chanting. Then there's no difficulty. But when we're idle, when we're not chanting Hare Krishna, not reading, not engaged in spiritual purification, then we get our hands on the keyboard, or we're off in a legal office somewhere, or whatever, trying to create mischief, or not trying, but creating mischief anyway.
One project goes off
philosophically,
what to do?
One project wants to be on its own?
Yeah.
Fine. You want to be on your own? Be on your own. Who's stopping you? Well, that's a different thing. You want to be on your own? Be on your own. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to be a thief to be on your own. Go be on your own.
But then you have to fight.
Why? We don't have to fight. Go be on your own.
No, you as the disturber of the one who feels the problem before the...
Well, that's the problem. Picked up your own out of false prestige or whatever. Now you want to claim assets that are not yours. That becomes problematic.
And there's friction.
Hmm?
There's immediate friction.
Then there's friction, sure.
It almost seems like in this age, friction is unavoidable.
In this age, friction is unavoidable. It'll always be there. Prabhupada, one time, I was on a balcony with him in Mayapur, said, anything good you want to do, he said, you'll have to go through so much difficulty. Anything good you want to do, you'll have to go through so much difficulty. Mm-hmm.
Is it not Maharaj that it is a selfish nature?
What is the selfish nature?
To get to this name, work done, everything.
Yeah, false prestige. Yeah, as soon as you're Krishna conscious, everything's for Krishna, genuinely, purified heart, there's not a problem. As soon as it's my false prestige, my ego, my control, my this, my that, then you have problems.
If the devotees understand this nature, we keep away this.
Excuse me?
We keep away this selfish.
Yeah, we have to, well, therefore chanting, Kirtaniya Sadhari, chant Hare Krishna, and then your selfish nature becomes dedicated to the Supreme Self, not to the little self. Anything else? Interesting. It's a grim world. It's a grim world. And Prabhupada therefore said, no place for a gentleman. Material world is no place for a gentleman. Our business is to get out. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.